welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here. Hello, my favorites. How are you today? This is Nicole, and you've reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Happy to be here with you today. So today we have an incredible conversation with Evie. Evie was only 15 when her back pain spiked to the point where she could not function. And I've been telling Lisa this a lot. We've been noticing it when we look in our communities and when we walk through this earth and talk to people about this work. So many people are coming to this younger and younger, which is such a celebration, because as much as I completely love when people find it at any age. In fact, I just received a DM the other day, a woman whose mother had experienced her first bout of huge chronic pain at age 94 and did my work and now is completely active. And I'm like, dude, that is freaking awesome. And I, by the way, will be tracking her down to see if she's willing to come on the podcast for an interview. But having said that, it's amazing that people in their teens and in their 20s are finding this work, and it's going to change the course of their entire lives, which, as you'll hear very articulately, Evie describes. And so I just had the best time talking to her. Evie was slated to be a professional violinist. She was in a very, very serious conservatory from the age of 9, boarding school, hours and hours and hours of practice every day, including Saturday. And by the time she was 15, her nervous system threw up a stop sign in her face. And there are a lot of reasons for that that we're going to talk about. And, you know, Evie was willing and open, and she saved her own life. And I always say, when people DM me and email me and say, Nicole, you saved my life, I always say the same thing, which is, I gave you the tools, but you saved your own life. And that is certainly what happened here with Evie. So I'm really excited to share that interview with you today. If you indeed are a person out there that's looking to communicate with me, that's looking to have your question featured on the podcast perhaps, or just, you know, speak into something that I will hear, please go to speakpipe.com/Nicole Sachs. I have a SpeakPipe account. People record their messages there for me. Sometimes I use them on air in this podcast, and sometimes I just listen to them with Lisa, and we take your questions as themes for podcasts that we'll create in the future. So please, if you're part of this community and you want to be heard, go to speakpipe.com/Nicole Sachs and leave me a message. And if you indeed want to be in the space with me learning live at a live retreat, my Omega Institute is filling up fast. There are still spots available. I don't know how long the accommodations availability will last. So go to eomega.org and search my name, or go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, and click on the retreats tab and join us June 25th through the 30th at Omega. I am running a contest between now and April 15th. If you sign up for Omega, you will be entered to win a free therapy session with me prior to our retreat that we will do on Zoom. So if you want to meet with me and have a one-on-one and you want to win that, just enter to join us at Omega. When I say enter, I just mean sign up for Omega, and you will be automatically entered for that. And I will draw that on April 15th, tax day, if you're in the US. Anyway, so that is, you know, some stuff I wanted to make sure to announce at the top. All right, my loves. Well, I hope that you're doing okay. I hope whatever struggles you are having on this day or this week or this time of your life can be slightly alleviated just by being here with us today with beautiful Evie and her inspired story of reaching a really, really low point and finding her way back up to the surface and then really transcending the surface to be living an incredibly joyful and delightful life. So I'm psyched to share that with you today, and I hope you get a lot of wisdom out of it, because I certainly did. I love learning things from someone who is the age of my child. So great. All right, guys, lots of love. Enjoy this interview with Evie. Hi, everybody. Today I'm here with Evie. Welcome, Evie.
Hi. So happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here. So Evie is a sweet baby. She's 20 years old. She's the age of my oldest daughter. And just before we jumped on air, I was saying to her, what a miracle it is to have found this work so young, right?
Yes, I'm extremely, extremely grateful. It hasn't been that long since I even started it. So I feel like I'm like really, really lucky.
You are. And I'm thrilled that we were able to make this interview work because I so badly want to inspire young people that like you don't need to be in your 50s with a lifetime of chronic pain for this to be something that becomes reasonable to do. So I'm thrilled to have you here. And as I always do, Evie, I want to begin by just kind of handing the baton to you and letting you tell your story.
Okay, great. All of my chronic pain journey is very tightly bound up with music. I was a violinist, so I'll just start from the beginning. I started violin when I was 3 or 4. I'm from a musical family. My brother is a professional musician. And it was kind of expected that I would just go and be a violinist, like not in a pressurized way, but it's just was kind of the expectation.
Right.
So I went to boarding school when I was 9. It was a specialist boarding school for classical musicians. And for anyone listening that doesn't know about that kind of culture, I guess you could say, it was very intense. Like our school days began at 8 a.m. and finished at 6:30 p.m. So we did all the usual academics that you do in school, as well as like a lot of music performance, obviously. So our timetables was usual academics plus personal practice and then stuff like orchestra, chamber music, choir. We had school on Saturdays. So it was like very
full. Wow.
from a very young age. And I was there from 9 to 19. So I was there for 10 years. My pain started in October 2017 when I was 15. So I was very young. I don't exactly remember how it started, but I think I kind of leant over one day in PE and my back kind of just like, I felt it go. And then I remember.
God, that's such a typical TMS story where like, it's like nothing, it's a day like any other day.
Yeah.
And you just like reach for something or you lean, or that's exactly how it happened to me.
Yeah. I've heard so many people on the podcast say the same thing. And it's just like your brain just decides one day, okay, that's it.
Right. Right. It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I remember standing in an orchestra rehearsal and I just could not stand. Like I could not keep myself up. I was so uncomfortable and I was so confused. But at the same time in classical music, it's kind of expected to get injuries. I think it's a very physical occupation, but a lot of people, especially when you're like age 15, you don't really take the warming up seriously. Like you don't take care of your body like you should, I guess. So a lot of people get hand injuries. Back injuries are not that uncommon. So I kind of just thought like, oh, okay, I'll just, you know, once we get all these Christmas concerts out of the way, like I'll be fine. I was not fine.
Right.
I remember like around Christmas time of that year, I was trying to practice at home and it got to like 15 minutes in and I could not stand again. I was so in pain and I did not understand what was going on. I went to the doctor. They gave me like some painkillers. I was like, okay. Went to the physio, got some exercises because they thought my shoulder muscles were just weak. Still throughout 2018, like went to some more physios, got some massages. They just all said that I had like weak muscles. I also got told that I had a really dramatic curve in my back, and I had to like change my posture when I played, which did help like a little bit. But I think a trend that you'll see like when I talk about these physios is like I wanted them to help so much, which made them help. But
yes.
Then they never did anything long term. Like it always just went back. And most of the time it became worse afterwards.
My God. Like I just have to jump in and say how it's like beautiful and tragic when something is so typical. You know, it's beautiful because I just love to see the shared human experience and how it's so ubiquitous, certain experiences, but then it's so tragic because I totally get it. You're young and you really are confused and suffering and probably very scared. And then you have this experience where you're trying to be helped and people are helping you, but then it gets better and then it gets worse because that all has to do with your nervous system feeling like, okay, phew, something finally happened that is going to help me, which is a relief, and the fight or flight or freeze syndrome slows and calms down. And then, of course, when indeed it doesn't really long-term work because that's not what you needed to do, it's the fear is even more heightened. So like, I just want to bring a lot of connection to how common that is.
Yeah, I actually picked up I was keeping a diary at the time, and I picked it up before I came on just now. And you can really see like the up and down, and there's a lot of hopelessness in there. It's like, I had these periods called like clear periods, I called them, where it was like my back felt like a normal person for like a couple of days. I could like sit in a chair without thinking about it. And then I would sleep wrong, or like, you know, I would twist the wrong way, and then it would all just go back down. And that just happened over and over and over again, like continuous cycles. And it was just like exhausting, especially for like me as such a young child, basically, like, had no idea what was going on.
Right. And also not, you know, I mean, I don't mean to diss boarding school, because I'm not dissing boarding school, but you weren't with your parents. Like, you were alone. You know, you might have been with friends and your support system, but you were alone. And I also just want to say one thing, because I feel like it's still so common for people to lapse into it. When your pain was worse, it wasn't because you slept wrong or because you twisted something or because your posture wasn't. This all comes down to this brain science behind why our nervous system informs our brain to send pain signals. So just always keep that in mind, because the more we solidify that thinking, the safer we are from that syndrome to happen.
Yeah, I'm very, very aware of that. And I will actually talk a bit about that later. I think the whole kind of neuroplasticity aspect is like a huge aspect of this for me. Like,
yeah,
I developed so many habits and beliefs that kind of were cemented into my brain. And like, I'm still undoing a lot of them. So that's like a huge thing. But so that was 2018. I also had an x-ray. Obviously, you know, didn't give me anything of note. Bought like a cushion to use in orchestra to like help my posture. Bought like a vibrating foam roller that was supposed to like regenerate my muscles. Obviously that also didn't work. So it was just like so many things that I was trying. I was very lucky that my mom was very like supportive throughout everything. She took me to so many appointments and bought me like things that would help. So I'm like very, very grateful that I had that. But I had to kind of, I need to stress how intense the music education was. And it's kind of like, you're just kind of gearing yourself up for this career in music, right? So I had to end up kind of dropping out of the things that I really enjoyed, like chamber music and orchestra. It was like, people are depending on you to come to rehearsals and be on time and, you know, pull your weight, and I just could not be reliable. So I had to drop out of all these things, and I felt so useless because I was like, well, I'm supposed to be doing a career in this. I'm supposed to be going to college for performance in like 4 years, and I can't do anything, basically. And it just ended up getting worse and worse and worse. And then in 2019, I went to another physio who told me I had hypermobility. And this was like the most hopeful moment. I do have hypermobility, but now I know that that was not the reason that I was in pain.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are, I hear this over the years, a lot of people are told things like you have hypermobility, but I would say, and I can't speak percentages precisely, but like not in the high 90s of 90% of people who have hypermobility have absolutely no pain. It is not a condition that should cause pain. It's just a physical condition.
Yeah, of course. But the way the physio phrased it to me, like, it made sense, right? Like, it was like, oh, you have hypermobility, your muscles are being put under, or your joints being put under a lot more stress because you're playing violin, so you need to strengthen your back muscles. I was like, oh, right. That makes,
yeah, makes sense. Yes.
Yeah. So again, it was like so much hope. And then I was given all these exercises to strengthen my muscles. And it was like, again, yeah, like some things helped, but long run, nothing really. And then I stopped going to her in the pandemic because obviously you couldn't go to appointments and stuff. So then in 2020, I kind of had to come to the conclusion that I could not do violin anymore. Like my entire life was kind of like, yeah, you're going to be a violinist. And then it was like, I had to start applying to colleges and universities. And I was like, well, I can't play for more than like half an hour before I'm literally crippled and I have to lie in bed for like 3 hours. This is not sustainable. I can't live a life where this is my life. Like, it's just not possible at all.
Right.
And I was actually very lucky that I have another passion, which is English, which I'm studying at uni now. I'm very lucky that that was something else that I had. So I had something to lean on other than music. I don't want to think about what it would have been like if I didn't have that. But yeah, so I basically just had to decide to like completely reroute my entire life and go into something that I had not even considered before. Like, it was just, you're going to be a violinist, that's how it's going to be. And then suddenly it wasn't. And I just had to, you know, figure everything out. I don't know. I mean, I have, so something's going right, but
yeah, I mean, it's just like, God, that I have so many feelings about this because I'm going to hold my thoughts until you're done with your story. And okay, then we're going to discuss it on the other side. But I guess for now, all I'll say is that, you know, TMS, although it is obviously inconvenient and miserable and uncomfortable and somewhere between, you know, the inconvenient and the agonizing to the point of despair, it's also so lovely, the protective mechanisms of our brain and our nervous system to, quote, save us from our life circumstance. Because I don't really know in your heart how you feel about being a musician. And I also am not, you know, your story is not over. You're 20. You still may be. But I think that it's genius that you, as a small child put in boarding school, lived this whole life, you're certainly going to be a violinist, never would have had the voice in, you know, amidst perfect health to turn to your parents and your teachers and the world and say, hey, guess what? I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to go study English. You know, like, nobody would have taken that from you. And I don't even know if you would have had the power to say it, but your body did it for you. And I just see it as so fascinating. And I always want to separate the negative connotation that we have for pain and just replace it with, pain is strong stimulation and it's information. And we get to decide how we listen to it. Because for me, freedom means that we have choices. And I hope that, you know, as you live, that's what it becomes for you.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, actually, because I did actually make a note of, like, I was thinking before about, like, why my pain happened. And before I knew it was TMS, I assumed that it was, like, built up tension, because I was always a very tense player when I was playing violin. And I just kind of assumed that, like, my body couldn't take it anymore, and my back just, like, failed one day, which obviously, yeah, like, that's
no,
a thing.
That is categorically not why. And I'm not saying that that's a bad way to think about it. That's a really natural way to think about it. But I'm telling you with all of my certainty, that is not why that happened to you.
Yeah, of course. And then I realized later, like, in around 2020, I did actually sit down with myself and I was like, you know, I don't want to be a violinist. Like, even if I didn't have the pain, I love violin with all my heart. I love music with all my heart. Like, violin is my home, literally. But I never wanted it to be my career. Like, right. But I could never be honest with myself or other people, because it's like, people put so much money and time and energy into giving you this education, and like, you just don't do, you don't do that. You don't just say no and do something else at the end of it. So I think a big part of it was like my brain kind of like, I think of it as a silver lining now, because I know I would be at music college now and I would not be happy, because that's just what I would have done.
And I mean, this is why... this is why it's such a gift for you to have had this happen so young, because I am constantly talking to people moving through the world and constantly interviewing people on this podcast. And so often they have to be in like midlife before they have either enough pain or enough frustration to actually speak the truth. And the fact that your body did this to you in such a way that you had no choice but to follow your passion and your truth rather than what everyone expected of you, is it's just a gift. And it's so interesting. I don't know if you ever heard the episode I did with Natalie. She used to have the moniker Olivia, and she had this incredibly horrible head and facial pain.
And
she was around your age. She was a little older. She had graduated from undergrad and she was getting ready for vet school. So you have heard her story.
Yes. Yeah, I have.
Okay. And for anyone listening who hasn't, go back in the podcast. I don't know the number, but search for I think it's called like Olivia, the toughest case I ever had, like I ever dealt with or something, because her case was so extreme. She was just really young and also like really, really suffering and suicidal, and it was really bad. And that was back when I was in private practice. And so I saw her personally. But the reason I'm bringing it up is there's a follow-up to that Natalie/Olivia story that I never have spoken about on the podcast, but it's reminding me so much of what you're saying that I want to say it now, which is when she finally – so her pain story was that she was, you know, so disabled. She did the work. She resolved her pain in like this really miraculous fashion, was able to go to vet school, graduate at the top of her class, went to do her internship, and then – around the time of her internship, right before she was going to do internship, she had another bout of really bad pain. It just, you know, because recovery is not a straight line and it ebbs and flows. And she called me, and what ended up happening, very similar to you, is that when she was young and she was passionate about animals, her family had put so much money and time into her passion for wild animals. And they flew her to Thailand and she worked with elephants, and like she wanted to be a zoo veterinarian and or like something with like these huge exotic wild animals. And after she got her education, she realized that actually isn't what she wanted. And she just wanted to do like regular dogs and cats, you know, emergency medicine, whatever. And that's the internship she wanted. And she had such mental block against being able to admit to all these people that had supported her and spent money and like spent energy on this like crazy unique passion she had for this wild animal medicine, that she didn't want to do it. And she didn't want to do it at all. And like all she had to do was come to that truth. And like through our conversation, she was able to say it out loud. She was crying. And I was like, honey, it's okay. You know, you don't have to be what you've always been just because you signed up for it when you signed up for it. And I really think that's something that people need to hear, because so many of us get trapped in our own story of like, I could never tell people that I've changed my mind. Or, you know, maybe someone's engaged in the wrong relationship and they're like, oh, I'll just get married because it's too embarrassing to call off the engagement. Or, you know, things like that are like major things in your life. And when I hear you, Evie, talking about this, all I think to myself is like, this is your life. Like, this is your life. Like, you can't just do what other people expect you to do because you followed along for a certain amount of time. So I just, the whole thing is just really beautiful to me, the way your body held up the stop sign so you were able to step out of the flow of that guilt and that worry.
Yeah. And I don't want it to seem like people were pressuring me into becoming
I think it's such a personal thing.
Yeah, it's just like I didn't even know, you know, like I wanted to play the violin when I was a kid, but you grow up and you change your mind about
it. Of course. Yes.
And, like, it's amazing that like my body like forced me to like accept it, I guess. Like,
exactly.
Like you say, I never would have made the decision not to do it on my own. But like, you know, it just turned out that I didn't have a choice and I had to give up because I had nothing else. And I'm like, now I'm on the other side, like incredibly grateful. Yeah, just like so happy that that happened. Obviously not at the time, but like people always say on this podcast, looking back, it's like completely transformative in like so many ways.
Okay, so tell us what happened. So you're flat on your back in so many ways. How did you find this work? What did you do? Like, take us through it.
Yeah, so in 2021, I left school. I graduated. I was able to get into a uni in London, which I'm at now. I'm in my second year. My pain was still really, really bad when I came to uni. Like, I have one memory of like where I lived last year, there was a shop like 10 minutes away. And I had to go there to buy groceries. But the way that my pain was, it was like I could only do one thing every day. So I would rest on my bed. It was like very specific. I had to rest semi-supine with my palms facing upwards, with my arms flat on my sides at a 45 degree angle.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, did you have a compass?
Yeah, no, literally. It's like I had all of these things that was like I had to do them, otherwise my pain would be so bad. But like it was so bad anyway, so they didn't even do anything. But like I had to rest once I got up. I had to rest for 3 hours on my bed. Then I could do my 10-minute walk to the shop. Once I got to the shop, I was in so much pain I could not stand. And then I walked 10 minutes back, rested for like the rest of the day, and then went to sleep. And that was my day because I couldn't do anything else.
Wow.
So that's how it was when I first went to uni. And then I've written here, I've made notes for this because, you know, perfectionist and typical TMS personality planner, but someone on TikTok posted about Curable and they said something about Curable and chronic pain, and I was like, oh, that's really interesting, I'll download it. And I actually already had a feeling that there was something mental going on because I'd noticed that when I was drunk I did not have any pain.
Right.
Which could have gone very badly, but luckily it didn't.
Right. Yeah, the answer is being drunk all the time.
Yeah, no, I'm very glad that I was able to not let that become a problem. But yeah, I was thinking, well, maybe like there's some kind of mental aspect to this. I didn't think that it was, you know, my pain was like anything like TMS. Like it was completely mind-body, like mind created, but I was thinking maybe there could be some kind of like neuroplasticity.
Right.
And then Curable made me kind of realize that that was a thing. So I started making myself go out for walks because I didn't know what to do with that information. I was just like, okay, let me try and not be as afraid of the pain. So I'll go out on some walks by myself, which was very painful. It was a lot of courage took to do that. And one day I was like, okay, I don't want to listen to music today. Why don't I listen to a podcast? Mm-hmm. And I went on Spotify and I typed in chronic pain.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah. So from then I just started listening to a podcast. I thought that when I left school that my chronic pain would go away, because the way that I saw it, the violin was the reason for the pain, because obviously I thought that it was like a tension thing or a posture right. thing or a hypermobility thing, but it didn't go away. So when I was listening to a podcast and it was like, oh, this might not be a physical problem, I was like, oh, well, this makes sense, because now I haven't played violin in 3 months and I'm still in so much pain. Surely it would have gone by now if it was to do with the violin. Right. So into 2022, I had one more thing that I had to do before starting the work, and that was get an MRI. I have heard other people on the podcast say this, but I was very, very conflicted. I so badly wanted them to find like a problem with my structure and say, okay, just get the surgery and you'll be fine. I was so, so hoping for that. And then when they sent me an email and they were like, nope, you're completely fine. There's nothing wrong with you. I was so upset and I just cried so much.
Baby, you're so lucky though. I totally get why you cried, because you know, with the old paradigm, which everyone's in until they're not, it's a relief to have a diagnosis because you just want to give your power away to it. You're desperate because if you can give your power away to something that can be fixed by someone else, well, hallelujah. But I, from where I'm sitting, am so thrilled, because if you had gotten a diagnosis, you could have been one of these people where I'm interviewing you in 10 years after two failed surgeries.
Yeah. But I think I was so, it wasn't just that. I think I was also really afraid of starting to do the work, because I knew at this point I'd listened to many, many episodes and I knew what it entailed. And it's like, of course you don't want to face it. Like it's intense emotions. And like, I didn't want to do that. But at that point it was like, okay, this is the last thing. And I was very skeptical. Like, I completely understood what you were saying and I believed it because I heard other people's stories, but it felt like I was going to be the anomaly, because it felt like that's how these things always go for me. Like, works for everyone else, but doesn't work for me.
Oh, that's so cute, because everyone thinks that. I think that about myself all the time.
But, you know, it did work. And I don't remember like exactly how it went, but I just started journaling. I made the list. I did the journal speak. And then I was able to purchase the course like in May, I think. Finished that. And then things just started happening. Like I mentioned earlier how the habits and the like the hole I dug myself into was like very deep. Like I convinced myself that I needed all of these things in order to keep my pain under control.
Right. The 45 degrees and the hand position. Yeah. Yeah, got it.
And I think the journaling and the repressed emotions were like, of course, a very big part of getting better. But I think bigger than that was letting go of the fear for me.
Yes, yes, yes. It's both. It's always both. It's always both. Yeah, yes,
definitely. But I think for me, like, I didn't even realize how much fear I had regarding the pain. Like, this is why I could not stand or sit or do anything for more than 5 minutes. Like, I couldn't hold a bag on my shoulder with nothing in it, because my brain was like, there's a bag on your shoulder, so your shoulder's gonna hurt.
Right.
Right? And, like, I had all these things. Like, I couldn't sleep unless it was on my back. Like, I had to train myself to sleep on my back, because I was convinced that if I slept any other way, I would wake up, like, crippled and in pain and unable to move. And, like, just all of these things that just, like, started to melt away once I was educated on TMS and I knew what was going on. And I don't want to act like it was easy. It was not easy at all. Like, I think I'm very lucky that it didn't take very long for me to begin to recover. I know a lot of people, it does take a lot longer than I did, but it was very, very difficult. Like, my main habit that I had was resting every morning. I think I mentioned, like, I would wake up and eat breakfast, and then before I could do anything, I would have to lay on my bed for at least 2 hours. Otherwise, I would not be able to move.
Wow, that's such a time commitment. I'm so glad that you moved past that.
It was awful. It got to the point where I like could not schedule anything before 12 p.m. Like I had to email my uni and be like, can you not give me classes until 1 p.m. because I can't move before then.
Right.
And then like now I'm like, oh, 9 a.m. Let me get up at 8:40. Like,
right.
But yeah, like one day after I did the course, I just woke up. I was like, you know what? I cannot be bothered to rest today. Like, I just want to get on with my life.
Right.
Like, I didn't rest that day and I was fine. And it was insane to me. Like, I remember it so vividly. It felt so weird because I had the same habit for like 3-4 years at this point.
Wow.
And then one day I just don't do it. And I'm like, it feels a little bit off. Like I feel a bit weak because I'm not used to it, but I'm fine. Like I'm not on the floor, unable to move.
Right.
It was insane to me. Like I could not understand.
Like but. I have to tell you, literally, Evie, it makes me want to cry. Like I'm deciding not to cry because I just don't fucking feel like it. But like it is so emotional for me to hear that, because like, please, every person listening, every little Evie out there who Googled this chronic pain and found my podcast like out of nowhere, like walking around in the forest of life, it is so important to gently and safely challenge the things that are keeping you safe, because so often I call that safe in the unsafest way. Like we build boxes for ourselves and we just get in them. And it's like, so how long do you want to live in a box? Mm-hmm. So I just love that story.
Yeah. yeah. Now I think of it, that we're just like, there's still some things that I can't do. Like it does take time to sever the ties that like mm-hmm. I've associated. Like, for example, I can't sit on the floor without back support. I can sit on chairs without back support, but the floor, nope, which makes no sense.
It's okay. Wear it loosely.
Yeah, of course. But my brain is just still working very hard at, you know, just trying to see things without the lens of pain, because I'm just like so used to it.
Can I make a little suggestion here, like a little real-time heal moment for you?
Oh my gosh, yes, please.
Okay, so here's the way I would like you to handle this. I can't sit on the floor without back support. For now, until you decide otherwise, which is you could decide otherwise next week or when you're 95, okay? So like there's your time frame. Say to yourself, so what? I'll sit with back support. And the reason I'll tell you this is why. Because I have spondylolisthesis, which means, as anyone knows, and you probably know who listens to this podcast, I have very severe abnormality to my lower spine. What that involves in my particular case is I have a whole vertebrae that's shattered and replaced with scar tissue, and I have stress fractures above and below that vertebrae. Of course, initially when I had my searing pain, the doctors thought that my pain was a result of my spinal abnormality. What I, of course, found out over 20 years ago is that abnormality is a normal abnormality. I was probably born with it. It's probably just like whatever, you know, nothing that would ever cause pain. And it doesn't cause me any pain. And I can do anything and I can do any exercise and I can carry anything no matter how heavy, blah, blah, blah. However, one result of spondylolisthesis for me, it's very hard for me to have an easy time with a straight posture. Like I will naturally kind of slump over, which it's like a lot of people do. So it doesn't make me look any like an unusual. But if I want to sit up straight, I have to be very mindful of it. And so I work on my core and I do all that stuff. But like to some extent, whatever, it doesn't really affect my life. However, one thing I've always found is when I'm sitting on the floor, I prefer, because of this whatever, to have back support. And I guess the way I've worn it loosely is like, who cares? And because you don't have a spinal abnormality, but your body is still doing whatever it's doing to you, I will tell you what a relief it is not to decide that something is wrong with you or that something needs to be better or that something needs to improve. You can decide right now that from now until the day that you are old and old, you are allowed to say, yeah, I just don't like sitting on the floor without back support. I'd prefer to just like stick my back up against a wall or a pillow or somebody else's knees or, you know, whatever's available to you. And like when you take away the fear-driven need to be like normal or to be other than you are, I think what will end up happening to you in the by and by when you just relax and wear it super loosely is one day you'll be in some sort of a situation where everyone just plops down on the floor and you'll say, fuck it. And you'll plop down on the floor and you'll have no pain for 3 hours. I just think that all of the urgency to, and especially at your stage where you've done so much of the work. So it's like tick, tick, tick off the boxes, you know, I'm fine when I do this and I'm fine with, but here's where I'm failing, is just a very unnecessary place to inhabit. So how does that land for you?
No, I totally agree. And like, I honestly don't feel much urgency anymore. Like, I'm at a place where I've consumed so much about all of this that I just have so much acceptance about everything. Like what you just said about, like, your friends sitting down on the floor and you just go, oh, fuck it, I'll sit there too. I can do that now. Like, if people are sitting down on, like, I know, like, something, like a chair that doesn't have a back, for example.
Right,
I can do that. These days, I'm just like, oh, okay. And then I don't care about it and it doesn't hurt. So I know that that will come with, like, sitting on the floor, for example, and I don't feel like I need to force it, because I know that if I get there, then I get there, and I'm sure that I will, but, like, it really doesn't matter to me anymore.
Perfect. However this goes, it's okay for you.
Yeah, it really is. Like, even now, I'm not gonna act like I have no pain. I do still have random pain every day in my back, but I don't care. Like, I really don't. I just, like, I feel it and I'm like, oh, that sucks. But I know it's gonna go away in, like, 30 seconds, so I just don't give it any attention. And it's so freeing, like, to go from being so preoccupied with my back pain 24/7, all day, every day. Everything is, like, directed by what it's gonna do to my back, to just, like, if the pain comes up, then okay, like, I literally don't care. it's yeah, I can't even explain, like, how nice it feels to be there.
You know, I think it's just a really beautiful place to arrive. It will also affect you positively in every area of your life, because acceptance is truly the answer to everything that inflames us, to stop fighting everything and everyone and just say, okay, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to show up and do my best in whatever way. And then however this goes, it's okay for me, because one thing you know in life is that you really can't control the outcomes. You can control your effort, but you can't control the outcomes. So it's a great space for your mind to be in.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, actually, because I know everyone that comes on the podcast says the same thing, but this work is so much more than chronic pain. It's
yes.
So much more than, like, living a life with no pain. I feel like I've become, like, a completely different person. And I'm sure that a lot of that just comes from growing up as well, because I'm at that age. But I'm just, like, the way that I have learned to think about pain, and the way that I've learned to deal with pain, and the way that I think about it has bled into, like, every single aspect of my life. Like, now acceptance for me is, like, my one thing that is just, like, for everything, not just about pain, it's about everything. And it's really nice to live like that. Like, lack of judgment as well. Like, I know you talk a lot about not judging yourself if the pain, like, you know, if you have, like, a pain relapse, quote unquote. And that really helped me. You know, sometimes you do get anxious and you get, like, you know, a little flare up, but the way that you respond to it is so important. And then I take that into, like, every other aspect of my life, and it's just, like, such a nice way to live.
My God, 20 years old. You're like a little Buddha.
Thank you.
It's really true. So tell me, how did you find the Journal Speak at that age? I mean, being, like, 19, 20 years old, doing this kind of intense work, have you been exposed to therapy much? Like, how did that land for you to try to embark upon that once you started?
Well, once I started, honestly, I did find it difficult, but I've never been someone that really repressed my emotions, like, to a very high degree. And I have always been somewhat accepting of things that I feel. So I didn't feel much guilt when I wrote things about people, because I knew what Journal Speak was about, and I knew what I stand for myself. And I know that what I'm writing isn't a true reflection of what I genuinely think if that makes sense.
Yes. It's just like, the inner child. It's just a temper tantrum. It's not, you know, it's like if you think of a four-year-old and they're hungry and it's almost dinner time and they say, can I have a cookie? And you say, no, honey, you know, dinner's going to be in 15 minutes. You can wait. And they're kicking on the screen, on the floor screaming, I hate you. I hate you, mommy. Does that child hate her mother? Like, no, it's just a feeling. It's being engulfed by a feeling of the moment. And that's what journal speak is.
Yeah. And it felt very freeing from the get-go. Like, I feel like I've been able to close the page on a lot of things that happened during my teenage years, because I did not have a good time when I was a teenager, as like many, many people don't. But I didn't really have the opportunity to reflect on those things and how they affected me until I was forced to through Journal Speak. And I'm very grateful that I got to do that. And actually, I applied for therapy September 2021. I applied for CBT, which is, I mean, obviously, like, for pain management, I applied for. Because at that time I hadn't started recovering and I was like, I need some help in managing this pain. But by the time I actually started therapy, which was September last year, so 2022, I was like already fine.
Right.
And I didn't need the pain management bit anymore. So I got to use that therapy on other things. It actually, helped me through a difficult breakup, so it came out like the perfect time. But I just find it funny that I applied for it for pain management, and then by the time I got there, I got to my first appointment and my therapist was like, so you applied for I see you have chronic pain, like, do we need to like help you with coping techniques? And I was like, no, I just healed myself already, so let's talk about other things.
That's amazing. I love that so much because, you know, I have a very non-skeptical view of therapy, and I think every single person on the planet could use it, should use it, you know, if they possibly can, because it's just such a beautiful space to be able to take care of your mental health the way you would take care of your physical health, you know, in any other way.
Yeah, it's really great. And I was saying to my therapist about this work, actually, and hopefully she'll listen to this because I told her that I was doing the podcast. I was just really excited to do therapy, actually, because it was something that I always wanted to do. And I felt like I'd already kind of tapped the surface with Journal Speak.
Yes, yes.
Kind of like accessing emotions and feelings that are difficult to say out loud. But I don't think that that's a issue for me anymore.
So Evie, I want to ask you something. It's coming up for me right now, just because I'm always working on things. And right now, one of the things that Lisa, my partner and producer, and I are working on is content to create a course for adolescents and young adults, people who are suffering in massive proportions right now, especially after the pandemic, with anxiety, with depression, and with chronic pain of all kinds, migraines, stomach issues, you know, back, neck, shoulder, all, you name it. And so being a person that is so young and has such a masterful ability to explain and to have lived this experience, what is your advice for a teenager? What is your advice for a teenager who is like so naturally so bottled up? You know, we all protect ourselves so much as we're emerging from being children into those teenage years. You know, what would you say to kids that are potentially feeling the result of that bottling up, which is some level of chronic issue like I just described, and sort of not knowing if this work would work for them?
Oh my goodness. I think I would just say, everything is okay. Not everything will be okay. Everything is okay. Like, in terms of whatever you feel, I think a lot of the time when we feel things we don't want to, the fact that we judge ourselves for feeling them makes it so much worse.
Yes.
And that's something that I've learned over time with this work. I just, anything I feel, I'm just like, that's fine. Like, I feel it. Like, I can't do anything about that, you know? And that's just how it is. Like, the more you resist it, the worse it's gonna get. And I wish I had known that when I was a teenager. I feel like I judged myself so much for feeling things that I just assumed that other people didn't, and I didn't right. talk to people about them because I was like, well, I'm just no one else seems sad, like
right.
it's just me. But if I knew that it was fine to feel anything, then I feel like it would have been like a weight off my shoulders, I think, at least partly, because I know that being a teenager and being young is very difficult.
It's like, fantastic. It's fantastic advice, Evie, because I think, you know, one of the things that we all know at this point is social media perpetuates people's misery so deeply. Okay. And it's exactly because of what you just said, that like you assume when you look at everybody else's Instagram or TikTok or, you know, Snapchat or whatever the hell you're doing, that everyone is in a better space than you. And I will say, because I have several children of different ages and they're all on different social media platforms, I also know that people share their misery. You know, I have seen all the crying videos and all the snaps and stuff like that. But still, there's the space where you feel uniquely suffering. And if only in your journal speak, you can say, however I feel right now is just what I feel. It's not good or bad. It just is. And if I can allow that to be released, I'm not going to get stuck in that place that I'm suffering.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it as well is there's definitely a lot of comfort in feeling sad when you don't release it and you don't write about it or talk to people about it. You get yourself into a place where it's like feeling like upset and feeling like you're lonely and you're sad and like all of these things. It feels comforting and it feels like the only comfort that you have, and then it gets way harder to get yourself out of it, and it just becomes like an endless cycle. So
yeah, you know, I agree. When I teach at retreats, one of the things I do is I explain to people what is living in our reservoirs that are overflowing and causing the chronic pain. And oftentimes I divide it into several categories and I use really provocative words because I want people to understand how hard it is to talk about this stuff, you know, which is why people repress it. Because, you know, it's okay and comforting to feel a little sad, right? And to put on your sad playlist and to like, you know, have a good cry in bed. But when sadness becomes despair, it's not fun anymore. You know, when sadness becomes anguish, it's not comforting anymore. Just like when, you know, fear becomes terror or anger becomes rage, you know, like these are things that are, or just like maybe a little discomfort and embarrassment becomes shame. You know, these are the things that we end up repressing. And so I think your point is well taken, that when we allow ourselves to get into that cycle of like, I'm just going to be like weepy me in my bed and like gain comfort from it. If you don't get it out and you let it get stuck, it can really sink into despair and hopelessness, and nobody wants to live there.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, it's such heavy stuff and it's such good stuff. So Evie, if there's anything else you want to share about your journey, anything that you kind of wish people knew, you know, lay it on us.
Let me just think for a second.
Take your time. I always want to say, and I leave all this stuff in because it's just a human conversation, that like this is such a personal journey, and the fact that people are willing week after week after week to come on this podcast and tell it, I have such respect for them, and I don't want to put you on the spot. More than anything, I just want to give you the space that if like there was something you wish that someone had told to you in like the depths of your moment of like putting this podcast on, then go ahead. You know, it's your stage, but also no pressure.
Of course. I think I just want people to know that, like, I find it very difficult. Like, I'm very passionate about all of this because I feel like I'm a case study. Like, this worked for me. And when I try and explain to people, it's very difficult to explain, because like you always say, we are so used to the medical model of like, if something hurts in your body, then there's something wrong with your body. So to try and explain to people that that might not be the case is so hard, even when I'm like a walking example that it works. But it's like, I literally used to feel like there was acid running through my back muscles all the time. And now I'm just a normal person. Like, I don't know how you can get any more proof that this is like a thing,
right?
In that, you know, and I just want people, if there's anyone that is resisting doing this because they also think that they will be an anomaly and it won't work, just do it anyway. Like, it's not gonna hurt you in any way. Just do it. And it will, even if it doesn't get you entirely recovered in like 6 months, it will positively impact you, like in some way. And that's just how it's gonna be. I can't explain enough like how much this has changed my life. Like, I thought I was just gonna be like disabled forever, and that was just gonna be how it was, and I could never get a job, and I would never have friends, and I would not be able to live a life because I could not move 23 out of 24 hours of the day. But now I'm just like a normal person that does anything that she wants to and gets to go out and spend time with her friends spontaneously, doesn't need to rest, doesn't need to do any of this shit that is so boring. Like, I, if you're like, if there's anyone that is nervous about doing it, just please just do it. I don't know what else to say. Like, just do it.
It's a great message. It's the most important message, which is essentially what I say to people all the time, which is, if you can't believe, then just suspend your disbelief and just do the work and let your body be your proof, which is essentially everything that you're saying. And it's such a powerful message. And the last thing I want to say, because I'm just needing to say this for my own personal desire, do you, I just don't want you to feel like you'll never be a musician. I want you to keep that window open. And the reason why I do is because when you first DM'd me on Instagram, I clicked on your profile and I listened to you play the violin, and it like made me cry. It was so beautiful. And I just always want you to know that just because this is interrupted your journey, it's not the end of your story.
Thank you. Yeah, that's the thing that I do think about. The door is definitely not closed, but I do know that it's not gonna be the same.
Yes.
And I don't want it to be, because I know that I've like made my peace, you know. Like, I know I'm only 20, but there's some things that I don't want to be professional, and that is one of them. But like I said earlier, violin is still my home, so undoubtedly it will be a big part of my life forever. And yeah, it means a lot to me that you enjoyed my playing. I did actually cry when you sent me that message. It meant a lot to me, just like, firstly to talk to you, but then to know that like you actually listened to me play, and it was just like really like such a big moment for me.
Oh, I'm so glad. Because, like, we're all just here to inspire each other. And the reason I feel like I felt the need to say that at the end of the interview is because, like, I don't care if you play professionally, but like, play for joy.
Yeah.
You know, just like re-inhabit every moment that you've ever loved it, and just freaking celebrate, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to connect with each other. We're here to celebrate the fact that we get to be alive, and we're here to live it to the fullest. And that's the reason I spend my entire existence trying to help people get out of chronic pain, because chronic pain blocks you from every one of those things. And I'm just so thrilled for you that you found this at such a young age. And I know you're going to be an incredible ambassador for this work. And this is definitely not the last conversation we'll have.
Thank you.
All right. Well, for everyone out there, I'm sure you got tons out of this conversation with Evie. I certainly did. Evie, thank you for coming today.
Thank you so much for having me. It means so much to me.
The best. It's the best. All right, everybody. If you're enjoying this podcast, just hop over to iTunes and rate and review it, because there are people, tons and millions and billions of people like Evie, who are suffering and they have no idea that this work is an option. And when you go over to iTunes, believe it or not, and you rate and review it, the more people who do so, it lifts the podcast in terms of what they suggest, and it's the availability and the algorithm and all that crap I don't understand. So just please go do that, because all I want is for everyone on the planet to know this work is an option for them. And so thank you for that. And until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye.